भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 14 टेक्स्ट 25 क्वचिच्च शीतवातादि अनेकाधिदैविक भौतिकात्मीयानां दशनां प्रतिनावरणे अकल्पदुरंतचिन्तया विषण आस्ते. ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिविदान्त स्वामी प्रभुपाद. बीइंग अनेबल टू प्रोटेक्ट हिमसेल्फ फ्रॉम द थ्रीफोल्ड मिजरीज ऑफ मटेरियल एग्जिस्टेंस, the conditioned soul becomes very morose and lives a life of lamentation. These threefold miseries are miseries suffered by mental calamity at the hands of the demigods, such as freezing wind and scorching heat, miseries offered by other living entities, and miseries arising from the mind and body themselves. Purport. The so-called happy materialistic person is constantly having to endure the threefold miseries of life, called adidaivika, adhyatmika and adibhautika. Actually, no one can contract these threefold miseries. All three may assail one at one time, or one misery may be absent and the other present. Thus, the living entity is full of anxiety, fearing misery from one side or the other. The conditioned soul must be disturbed by at least one of these three miseries. There is no escape. Seeking the blessings of all senior devotees, especially Rasmandal Prabhu. I would like to continue this discussion on the fifth canto, chapter 14. In today's verse, which is number 25, Jad Bharat is continuing his explanation of life of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul here has taken the mood of a opportunistic merchant who wanders in this forest of enjoyment, thinking to lay his hands upon whatever he can find and use it to sell it off for some money and then become happy. So here he is saying, being unable to protect himself from the threefold miseries of material existence, the conditioned soul becomes very morose and lives a life of lamentation. Lamentation and hankering, they go hand in hand. You lament for something which you have lost, and you hanker for the same thing in a different way. Like somebody has lost his youth, he's hankering for his youth. Or somebody has lost one particular kind of wealth, he wants it in some other form. It also has its connotation in the way the conditioned living entity uses his thinking faculties, how he thinks. Lamentation is oriented in living in the past, and hankering is you are looking for the future. It's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada translates the meaning of the word Shudra, although it has something to do with his occupation, Guna Karma Vibhagasha, Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra, doesn't depend on birth, but depends upon what kind of activities you do. Guna Karma, your qualities and your activities. But specifically, a Brahmana is one who is not supposed to lament. Even facing an onslaught of miseries, he is not supposed to lament. And a Shudra is one who necessarily laments. So, Shochati, that there is a root word connecting that Shudra. Shudra means one who laments. So typically, when Prabhupada remarks that the whole world today is full of Shudras, it doesn't mean that in India, if you call someone a Shudra, it's an insult, because they were grossly subjected to so many injustices, and they don't want that name either. They might be doing that work, but they don't want. And in a typical case of a politician trying to meddle in spiritual affairs without taking help of the acharyas is when one big politician started calling these people as Harijans. Now the intention was to call them that they are not outside society, they are actually, they belong to God. Harijan, like in the Bhagavatam, there is a word which says Vishnu Jana Priya. Vaishnavas are described as Vishnu Jana. Something which is, some people who are connected to Vishnu. Similarly, Harijana must be people who are connected to Hari. But then why only segregate this population, calling them Harijan? And of course, the whole thing misfired. And as Rupa Goswami warns, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidhim Vina. He cites Shruti Smriti Puranadi, means total Vedic literature. If you don't consult them, Aikantiki means on your own, and basically not on your own, with your own mind as your friend, as your counselor, as your guide. If you act on your own whims and fancies, Aikantiki Harer Bhaktir, if you do devotion towards God, Utpata Eva Kalpate, it's nothing but pain. Utpat generally means some kind of confusion, some kind of calamity. Like in our Niti Shastras, there is a story of carpenters working on a temple, and one team of carpenters, they are working on a log, they are cutting it, and there were no chain saws or mechanical saws, so they are cutting it by hand using a big massive saw going back and forth. And as they have to take the saw out when they go for lunch, they decide to keep a wooden wedge so that they know the ends don't meet together and they can start their work when they come back. But then a monkey, because of its frivolous nature, for no apparent reason, the monkey has no desire to, no capacity to help them or no capacity to consult them on any other aspects of cutting wood. That monkey decides to remove that wedge. And its tail, its lower part of his body, as soon as it removes that, the wood snaps tight and the monkey dies. So what business the monkey has when these people are working in this place? No business. So it is just the nature of someone who's practically no business. So politicians, what business they have in commenting on scriptures or even trying to adjust something which the scriptures have said regarding this particular politician. It was remarked that he is a saintly person among politicians and a politician among saintly persons, so neither group would have him. If it's a sadhu sangh sabha, then the sadhus would feel he is a politician, why is he here? And within a group of politicians, they would say he is too much of a saintly person. So in this way we can understand that artificially making someone a Harijan, it just, today if you call someone in India, you are especially a very elevated person, you are almost like a Harijan, he might slap you. So what do you mean? I look like one? Of course, no one looks like a Brahmana, no one looks like a Kshatriya. It's again, Shastra says, your activities. But specifically, lamentation and hankering. So when you hanker for some, when you lament for something, you are living in the past. You are only thinking of how nice were those days when I was enjoying something in this way, I was enjoying something in that way. Or you imagine some happiness which will come in the future. But at any cost, you are not prepared to live in the present. You're not prepared to take life as it comes, or as I say, you're not prepared to take the bull by the horns. You don't have that capacity. So devotees especially, and we see in the lives of so many devotees, the Bhagavatam empowers with its philosophy to live in the present, to accept whatever we might have done. Because a human form of life is the only chance to improve your destiny, not your material destiny, but spiritual destiny. So we find all kinds of personalities come in the Bhagavatam, all kinds of life situations are mentioned here. Almost everything is here. There is nothing, no one can say that this particular situation is not mentioned in the scripture, so how can I get some guidance? So we can just see the intelligence of Vyasadeva, and we can see how carefully Maharaj Parikshit only had 7 days. And in 7 days, he has to be given something which helps him, because his question was, what should one do when he is at the time of his death? What should one do? And the idea is, one should think of Krishna. So if thinking of Krishna is just stories, if they are just stories, the Puranas are full of so many stories. And some people may find, oh, you like Krishna stealing butter and all these stories. I like somebody else's stealing stories. I like the thief of Baghdad and his stories. There is some, if at all. Or if Krishna is dancing with other people's wives, somebody may say, I like the lives of one European gentleman, so-called gentleman, who had his affairs. But the difference is, as you start hearing Krishna Leela, there is a specific philosophy which is included, which explains to you why and how one should meditate on Krishna and what is the specific benefit of it. I was just once reading Bhagavatam with that particular thing in mind, and I found one very interesting thing, that when you read about Krishna, and apparently Krishna might be doing something, but for us, the conditioned living entities, the benefit is just the opposite. Krishna is accused of stealing. I mean, in Vrindavan he is accused every day, but even when he went to Dwarka, and as Dwarkadish, as the king, he was accused of stealing the Samantaka jewel. And it was very bad. And Dwarkavasis, they are not as intimate as Vrindavanvasis. So some of them were actually thinking that, we know he's a king and we know he has so many riches, but you know, sometimes the mind gets over you. So they're actually thinking that he might be tempted. And at the end, what is the benefit of hearing about Krishna's being accused? If you have been accused of stealing And that's a false accusation that will go away if you read that. Apparently, Krishna's lusty affairs, if you read that, Krishna's lust is described as apparent, because Parikshit Maharaj begins the Raslila by this question, Bhagavan Api. He's Supreme Lord. And although he's Supreme Lord, he engages in these kind of things. Why? So Krishna's lust is apparent, but our lust is real. It is not that apparently, you know, I seem to be in a conditioned state. No. My conditioned state is real as anything else here. But when you hear about Krishna's acting in that particular way, my lust goes away. We can check it for ourselves. Is there any powerful, mundane person, by reading about his illicit activities, the desire to commit that will go away from my heart? I don't think so. For sure it is not possible. In fact, just like in today's media, they swear that they just want to tell the truth. But the net result is that by reading about some crime, people are tempted to commit that. Sometimes thieves get ideas. They are stuck that how to rob a bank. And then they see some movie or they read some novel and they say, oh, that's a good idea. So it is not true that just by propagating whatever has happened to everybody in the world, people will be enlightened. Not necessarily. So coming to our point of hankering and lamentation, we have to come to the stage of understanding reality as it is. And what is that reality? In the beginning of the first canto, in the 7th chapter, there is something which Srila Vyasadeva saw. Of course, Vyasadeva is a literary incarnation of Krishna. The Vyasadeva whom we know is actually Krishna himself coming as his incarnation and giving us the scriptures. Sometimes there are living entities who are empowered to do that. But this Bhagavatam which we have explains that this is Krishna himself doing that service. So even Vyasadeva, when the point of getting spiritual knowledge is discussed, it's not that he gets it automatically. He gets it as a result of his guru's mercy. So even Vyasadeva is seen as being illusioned, a bit despondent, a bit morose. But he is not morose because he lost his job or he has nothing to eat. Not the common things which trouble people here. He has just completed compiling the Puranas, Itihasas, Dharma Shastras, everything. And that's like an unparalleled feat. It's not an easy job. Still he is feeling disappointed. And he meditates on his spiritual master, who immediately appears before him, Narad Muni. And Narad Muni explains to him in the 6th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, he explains to him how he got benefited, how he got benedicted. And he too doesn't say that, you know, I didn't go to any guru or something. I just have knowledge from my own thing. He says, I am a product of Vaishnava's mercy. Full and total. I was born as a maid servant's son. No proper education. No father even. But in the 4 months of Chaturmas, what we are having now, some sadhus came, pure devotees of Krishna. I got a chance to serve them. And once by their permission, I took some remnants of prasad which they had honored. And that has made me qualified. So then Narad Muni leaves. And before that he has given him the advice. You have compiled all these books. In all these books, somewhere or other, there is Hari Katha, Hari Leela coming, interspersed between so many events. But that is not going to satisfy people. Give them something which is Hari Katha from beginning to end. So Srimad Bhagavatam is that, the glorification of Krishna from beginning till the end. And so he begins his meditation in his ashram. His ashram is described as Badari Shand Mandite. It's not a constructed ashram either. It's just a collection of berry trees. Badari is berries, boar. And that's how he's living. In fact, an ashram is a place where there is some shram, there is some activity. It's not a place for just enjoyment or for comforts or from convenience. So therefore, there is Brahmacharya ashram where there is regulated activity, stipulated activity under the strict guidance of a spiritual master. There is Grihastha ashram. Of course, Brahmacharya ashram cannot be of two types, the light and the turbo. It can't be. It has to be only of one category. But the Grihastha ashram, there are two varieties. One is a Grihastha, one is a devotee, one who is progressive and is on par with a Brahmachari, and a Grihamedhi, one who doesn't want the shrama. He just wants that is aram. Just wants comforts. And of course, there's a heavy price to pay for those comforts. Also, there is Vanaprastha ashram and Sannyas ashram. So, civilized life given by Vedic culture, it depends upon making your stay in any of the ashramas. As Srila Vyasadeva began his meditation, he was alone. There was no one there to disturb him. He saw something. And these three verses, Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, says, these three verses describe all the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam practically.
Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranahite male apashyat purusham purnam maya tadapashrayam.
Bhakti yogena manasi. His mind was focused on Krishna in bhakti yoga. Yoga means joining, relationship, plus yoke. So many meanings are there. But specifically it is mentioned here, bhakti yogena. Because there are so many kinds of yogas which may not be permanent, which may not be having that relationship established firmly. But in bhakti yoga, Lord Krishna himself corroborates in the Bhagavad Gita, jnatum drishtum cha tatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. By bhakti yoga, jnatum, you can understand. Drishtum, you can actually perceive. Not just that, but praveshtum, you actually enter into the kingdom of God. So therefore, bhaktya tananaya shakya. Bhaktya tu, but there is no other process which can enable anyone to know, see and enter. So that is the specific benefit of bhakti yoga. So bhakti yogena manasi samyak, all his faculties, all his senses concentrated on understanding Krishna, serving him. The word seva, we use the word seva so many times. Seva just doesn't mean an affirmation that Krishna, I'll serve you. No, it's not just that. It is a contract. It is a yes for all subsequent yeses that I'll do this, yes. Krishna says do this, yes. Krishna says do this, yes. So it's not that we can say, but last year I surrendered to you, you know. Or I did that before. I chanted my rounds very nicely some time ago. It is a contract for all things coming in the future also. Because it is cultivation. Seva is cultivation of something. Like you can't say, I watered that sapling yesterday. What about today? What about tomorrow? Till the time it comes to a specific till the stipulated time is over, you have to keep on watering the plant. Like somebody wants mango, he has to water the mango sapling for 11 years, 12 years, 15 years before any fruit comes. But once the tree starts fructifying, then there is no need of you to water it every day. Then even the monsoon water is good enough. So similarly, sadhana bhakti, at least till one specific point of time, it has to be done as a regimen, as a routine. And of course, then there are other advanced devotees who do not need to follow these the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. It's not that they don't want to, they don't need to. They are already very on a high platform. In that trance, Vyasadeva saw apashyat purusham purnam. He saw Krishna purnam. Now what does purna purush mean? Purush, the word purush, can be understood as one who stays in a pur. Pur means a city. So this heart is compared to a city. So the super soul is also called purusha. The living entity also stays in this body. He also is called a purusha. And of course, purusha means an enjoyer. So we may feel that someone is driving his car and is an enjoyer. Someone is staying in a mansion and is an enjoyer. Someone is wearing an expensive gold watch and is an enjoyer. But still we find in our situations, someone may not be the enjoyer. Somebody may be sitting in his car, but be having stomach cramps. Somebody may be staying in his big mansion, but be worried that I have to pay so many taxes just to maintain it. Somebody may be married to a very wonderful man or a woman, and others may be so envious, but that person may feel worried that, you know, what if he goes away? What if she goes away? That doesn't happen with Krishna. He is full. Even if someone takes away everything what Krishna has right now, Krishna doesn't need to worry that, oh, something has gone. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, for someone who has millions and millions of Kamadhenu cows, and he also has other animals, and he loses one goat, what loss he has. Will someone report to him, sir, you lost one goat? No. Or like we see so many grain trucks flying here and there. If a truck full of mustard seeds and one mustard seed falls down in the road, the servant doesn't go after the fellow and say, hey, put it back, put it back. One mustard seed fell from the truck. Still, this would be an inadequate comparison. Krishna is still much more than that. Even if one whole material world, one Brahmanda decides, we don't want to do anything with Krishna, we decide to break away, Krishna will not think that, oh my God, one whole material manifestation with so much gold and silver in it is gone. What do I do now? There is no worry for him. He's full in renunciation also. But specifically, Purna Purush Krishna means, like when we say, this is a family photograph, and there are only children there, we may say, hey, where are the parents? If you say parents, if you say the family photograph, means it has to have father, mother and the kids. Typically, also the culture aspect is there. Typically, a king would be having the king, his queens, then the princes, then the bodyguards, then the servants. So depending upon how powerful you are, your total picture would mean just go on expanding. In today's terms, a family might mean just a mother, father and maybe one child. In the West, it might be two fathers or two mothers or one mother, who knows. So depending upon how degraded Kali Yuga is becoming, even the way we understand family is changing. But specifically, if somebody is a king and it's a, where is his kingdom? No, he lost it. Then there is no meaning to the word king. Like there are so many lords in England, nothing to lord over. At one point of time, if they get some riches from Africa or Asia and they go and they buy some shire and they become their lord or count or whatever. They have something to own. So Krishna as a Purna Purush means Krishna and his three specific energies. His internal energy, which is not seen normally by the conditioned living entities. His external energy. And the living entities who are in between. So Vyasdev saw everything. He saw something else. And this is the crux of the whole matter. He says in the next verse, Yaya sammohito jivo atmanam trigunatmakam parote paropi manute anartham tatkritam chabhipadyate. He saw that yaya sammohito jiva. He saw that particular potency which sammohita, mohit is the basic root is moo, or is bewilderment, illusioning, illusion. We have moha. Krishna is called Mohan, one who by his charms he bewilders you. And Radharani is called Krishna bewilders even Cupid, Madan Mohan. And Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini. She is the one who bewilders Cupid, who bewilders everybody else here. We are all bewildered by Cupid. Yesterday Braj Bihari Prabhu told us all his five arrows, how he bewilders. In fact, we are happy. We go with targets on our forehead. Please, please hit me. Someone might say, so long, I haven't been hit by Cupid at all. Oh, how unlucky I am. So, Cupid bewilders everyone, but Krishna bewilders even Cupid. Cupid, Kamadev, is also a demigod, also a person. And as you see your potency, how you can bewilder someone, he decided to act smart. He decided to go. He was actually allowed in the Rasa arena, the Rasa Leela. And when he saw that Krishna is about to perform his Rasa Leela, the Sharad atmosphere, we'll be having Sharad Purnima soon, the month of Sharad with flowers blooming and very gentle breeze flowing. He thought, this is for me, this is what I do. And then he saw Krishna, a young boy, and then he saw young girls, and they're about to dance, sing. And he said, well, this is somewhere where I can show my art. So when he decided to put that arrow on his bowstring and aim it at Krishna of all people, Krishna gave him a glance. And by seeing Krishna's beauty, Cupid fainted. Now that doesn't happen normally. For Cupid to faint, that means he has seen something which is beyond even his idea of what beauty is. He didn't see something horrible, that there's a horror look on his face. He saw something very beautiful. So that is how the bewilderment takes place in this world. But yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. What is the sammoha for a living entity? Trigunatmak. There are three gunas in this material world. Sattva, Raja, Tama. Everything is built on those three modes. They are the basic colors, like red, green, blue. The basic colors for all of the colors. And this triguna, atmakam, I feel I am made of these three gunas. So what exactly is the illusion in this material world? Let's say a magician sits here and from this glass he produces a rabbit. You all might go, oh. Now the rabbit is not an illusion. This dais is not an illusion. This glass is not an illusion. What was the illusion? The illusion was that the rabbit came from the glass. That's the illusion. If a rabbit comes from the door, you might say, oh, what's so great about it? So when Mayavadis say this world is illusion, they say this glass is illusion, the rabbit, everything is illusion. So then why are you arguing? And that also is illusion. So why discuss then? That's an illusion. So why exist? That's an illusion. So where do you want to go? Away from this illusion. What will you use for going away? Something illusory. That's not possible. How can something illusory help you escape from illusion? And that is their like a vain, glorious effort in just trying to get out of this illusion. They know there is something wrong with this world, but they don't know what is wrong. So Vaishnava philosophy doesn't say that, well, everything is illusion, don't worry about it. Like it happened with Prabhupada. He and three of his disciples were taking a morning walk. And I think it happened at Marine Drive here, or maybe at Juhu Beach, but maybe at Marine Drive, I think some more. That they came in a white ambassador car. Was it Marine Drive here? Anyone knows? Marine Drive, yeah. And after finishing a walk on the beach, Prabhupada said, let's go. So Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who was also Prabhupada's chauffeur at the time, he opened the door, went inside, and for some time was just fidgeting with the ignition. He said, I don't know, I can't start the car. And Prabhupada was getting impatient that 2-3 minutes have gone like that. And he was just fumbling for the right key. He says, all these keys, they work all the time, and why today they're not working? And after some time, a very well-dressed person came, and he saw somebody in his car, and then he looked at Prabhupada, and he said, oh, Swamiji, pranam. And both are looking as if, what's wrong? You know, we are about to go, and why are you looking at us like this? And he asked them, what are you doing in my car? And then it dawned upon Shyam Sundar Prabhu that, oh, we parked our car at the other end. But just because I saw that this car is here, he says, maybe I thought I parked it here. And then that businessman was a cultured person, a Vaishnav. So he said, will you please come to my house? Prabhupada said, no, we are busy. And then somehow he understood it was a misunderstanding. And later when they were coming in their own car, Prabhupada said, look, this is the result of some culture. If it was the West, he would have shot us. Why you are sitting in my car? So you are not an illusion. The car in which you are sitting is not an illusion. But thinking that this is my car is the illusion. So we are not illusion. Krishna is not an illusion. This material world is not an illusion. But thinking that this world is a place fit for my habitation, this is a place where I can be happy, that is the illusion. When I can own something here, that is the illusion. And the first step in owning something here, in claiming ownership, is this body. Aham mamata. Or mama aham iti dhiya. So many ways in verses it comes. Aham is I am this body. And oh, if I am this body, then whatever comes out of the body also belongs to me. I am not this body, I am soul. Oh, I am not this body, then the whole thing is snapped out. Then everything which is connected to the body belongs to someone else. So the sammoha, the illusion is that I am a product of material nature. And who does it for us? Who puts it into this illusion? This is the energy which Vyasdev saw. Paropi manute anartham tat kritam chabi padyate. Para api. Although he is higher than this material energy, although the living entity is superior, he thinks that I am inferior and he associates. So then what is the way out? Anarthopashamam sakshat bhakti yogam madokshaje lokasyajanato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. This is the specific heart of a Vaishnava. This is how he is like they say, his heart bleeds for others. Lokasya ajanato, knowing fully well that people don't understand that this is the illusion and what is the way out, what does he do? He prescribes the proper formula. Anartha upashamam. Anartham, there is nothing which is valuable for the living entity here. But he feels that I have to make my career here, I have to be very happy here. So he is given bhakti yoga adhokshaje. Krishna is described sometimes as adhokshaja. Adha akshaja. He is beyond the realm of our senses. Akshaja. Aksha sometimes means sight, seeing. Like we have this word ak. Aksha. Akshaja, born from your vision, born from seeing something. What you can see in this world. Krishna is something who is beyond those. In one lecture, Prabhupada said, like the Devanagari script goes from A, A, E, E to Ksha. Isn't it? A to Ksha. So Adhokshaja is, none of these things can actually describe Krishna. He is beyond even the realm of mundane consonants or vowels. You have to have empowerment. Only then you can properly describe. So bhakti yoga, as given by Srila Vyasadeva, consists of the 9 processes, beginning with hearing and chanting. And Prabhupada clarifies, mechanical chanting and hearing will not help. It is not that, oh, this is the way to go to Krishna. So that means, if I take this path, does Krishna have to give me something? That means that path controls Krishna. Isn't it? Like if entry into a ceremony is by visiting card, is by entry passes. Anyone who has an entry pass is allowed to go inside. So even if I am not a millionaire, but if I steal someone's wallet and I show that entry pass, I am allowed inside because technically that's the only rule. So can someone cheat Krishna like that? Or can someone say that, okay, I will do some chanting and hearing and I am supposed to go in the realm of Krishna? No. It all depends ultimately on the mercy of Krishna. If he is merciful to some particular living entity, then he doesn't care whether someone has fulfilled something or not fulfilled something. Then the rules don't really matter. But till the time Krishna's glance comes upon us, we have to show that we are sincere. So all the great acharyas, they are such great personalities, but they never claim that they are great. Another interesting thing in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the queens of Dwarka, they are supremely opulent personalities. But when they discuss with Draupadi, what is the goal of their life? They say, we just want to be the maid servants of Krishna. We'll be happy if Krishna allows us to do some menial service. So this is the greatness of the process of Bhakti Yoga. This is the greatness of Lord Krishna as the personality of Godhead. And this is the greatness of the devotees who perform that process. What is the alternative to not performing Bhakti Yoga? If someone says, you know, okay, becoming somebody's eternal servant is a bit tough for me. Servant I can become, but not eternal. Who knows, you know, what this person may do to me. So that is the specific fear in the heart of a living entity. And what is the cause of that fear? Being treated roughly by others. Of course, you also have treated others like that in the same way. It works both ways. So service is not present in this material world. There is only transaction. There is only mercantile business. We may, however, like to say that, no, I have loved someone purely or I have served someone purely. But only when we come and understand the lives of the great souls, we understand what real service is. So therefore, the alternative for not serving Krishna is a life full of anxiety, fearing misery from one side or the other. It may be terribly hot, like Bombay's second summer season is now starting, October heat, and you may have fever. Both adhyatmik as well as adhidaivik. Or it may be very cold, and you also may be having a cold. So many times the choice given to the living entity is only to choose between which misery. The other day I was discussing with a college student, and they say, what if someone by his effort, can you tackle the way the misery can come upon you? Can you overpower it? Like many people feel that, you know, look, this person was born in a poor family. For generations they were poor. And he came to Bombay and is now a multimillionaire. In fact, one astrologer told him that you are poor, but look, now he's a multimillionaire. So, the Shastras don't specifically say what specific misery will hit you. So, I was just telling him the point that if one person is supposed to have misery due to wealth, and that misery may be due to very less wealth. So, he may be feeling, I am poverty stricken, I don't have much money. But somehow or other, due to Herculean efforts, he becomes rich. Does it mean that he has no misery due to wealth? He may have the same misery, but now he's worrying what to do with the wealth. Or he may be worrying what to do with the people around him who might kill him because of the wealth. Or his servants or his sons who might be ungrateful. Similarly, if somebody has misery due to food, he may say, oh, that means I have no food in my destiny. I will work so hard that I will have all the daintiest of all dishes. Well, you might have misery to overeating. So misery cannot be avoided. Material nature is too powerful. And as Prabhupada says here, there is no escape. Very disappointing. In fact, one Western Indologist, he called the whole Vedic literature as extremely pessimistic. But no, they are not just pessimistic. They are not just meant to instill that fear in us. They also give a positive alternative. There are no false declarations here. There are no false advertisements with a small asterisk above saying that pure happiness in this material world and conditions apply. No, that's not the formula. In fact, the Bhagavatam is like the sun. Puran arko adhuno ditaha. It has just risen now. Since Krishna left, who will decide what is dharma? Who will decide what is knowledge? Who will decide what is illusion? And for the rest of Kali Yuga, it is this. Shukadeva Goswami says, it is Bhagavatam which will tell us what is the way out. It is the sun which has risen to give full knowledge. And as we know, when the sun rises, three things are visible. We can see ourselves, we can see the world around us, we can see the sun too. If the sun sets, we can't see the sun, we can't see the rest of the world, we can't see ourselves either. So the Krishna sun, when it rises, you can see Krishna, understand who he is. We can see the world, Krishna's energies, what they are. And we can also see ourselves as eternal servants of Krishna. And that is the platform on which we can expect pure happiness, free from any anxiety. Hare Krishna. So we shall stop here. Any comments, corrections, questions? Yes. Shidam Sakhaprabhu, at the back here.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, about this, we have discussed it many times before, but just again, get some perspective on this. The fact that, you know, the material world is a miserable place, and the only alternative available is to go back, you know, to Godhead and serve Krishna. So it's a very stark thing. At one side, you know, like the philosophy we always speak is that Krishna gives us the alternative. Either you live in the material world or you live with me. And it's very stark. The difference between the two is very stark. So, I mean, very often people ask us this question that though you're saying Krishna gives us the choice, the minute will, but what kind of a choice is this, which either you suffer eternally or you stay with me, you know? So, effectively, I don't have an independent will. I have to either choose to suffer or I choose to live, you know, this way. So, how do we respond to this kind of a...
I mean, you want some kind of intermediate care unit where you are neither a ICU patient, neither a full-fledged person?
That's the general perception that, you know, it doesn't seem like a choice at all. It's like, you know, either you want to stay separately, but you stay there and you suffer. Or, well, it's true, the material world is full of suffering. We experience it every step. So there is no doubt about that. And we also know that spiritual life is blissful. But there is nothing in between. So for a person who doesn't have experience of either thing, he asks that what kind of God is this who gives only this kind of, you know, choice. So how do we respond to that?
I think, this is my subjective understanding, this kind of query comes in the mind only of a practitioner. Those who are fully into it, they don't feel that they are in misery. Although we may know, like a drunkard who is punch drunk and who is lying in the city sewers with the pigs maybe, and he may be feeling people who are rushing off to work early morning, he says, why the hurry, you know, why they're working so hard? So what is making him comfortable? Is the situation comfortable for him? No. It is the substance which is taking control of his mind. He is not able to think. When slowly that effect of alcohol comes down, then he finds he's so miserable. So what is the way out? He cannot afford to remain sober because the reality is too harsh. So again he goes and takes shelter of that substance which will again control his mind. So he also has only two alternatives: either face reality or be in illusion. So it's not that Krishna specifically is this world is not like Krishna's game. He absolutely can give you that relative freedom. It is not that just because one person is lost, Krishna actually is feeling in his heart that actually I don't want him to go away, but then since, you know, he's my part, I have to. No, it's not like that. He fully respects the individual's minute sense of independence and he allows him. In that specific purport in the first canto, 7th chapter, Prabhupada writes that the charge of illusion is given to Maya, the external energy Maya. And Krishna has nothing to do with the activities of Maya. In a sense, Krishna doesn't do the activities which she is supposed to do. So she performs a thankless task of putting him in illusion and punishing and whatever. But at the same time, Krishna in his heart is actually praying for his welfare. And Prabhupada gives an example, like a father may give his son over to some agent for correction. But that doesn't mean the father says, you know, from today you don't have any connection with me because you have rebelled against me. No, it's not like that. Two, three examples Prabhupada gives here. The government may put a criminal in jail, or a king may put someone in jail, and then the king later himself may go in the jail and say, why do you have to lament, why do you have to suffer like this? Please come out. You show some improvement and I'll give you complete pardon. So somebody may say, you may do it right now also. You are the king. You made this jail. You made the laws. But that's not how it should be looked. Unless there is full freedom to disobey, There is no question of love. But anybody else than Krishna, like if you and me, and we have some people under our shelter, and if we say, okay, I give you full freedom to disobey, they might do something which may snap the relationship completely. They might do something that we might be losing them completely. We may never be able to reclaim them. But because Krishna is all powerful, even if somebody has decided to not have to do anything with Krishna, he is just, there is only a dream between Krishna and that living entity, because it's only a dream of separation, that illusion. He may feel for so many millions of years, I don't want to do anything with him. So, technically speaking, the third state doesn't exist. Whatever the living entity wants in this material world is found there. So how can he get something which is available there in some third place? Like the humorous story of a man searching under a street light on his knees. And a friend comes and says, can I help you? Did you lose something? He said, yes, I lost my gold ring. He said, okay, I'll also try to help you. After some time, he says, where did you lose it? He says, maybe in that park over there. So he said, then why search here? He said, but there is light here. It's all dark there. Just because it is light over here doesn't mean you can find something which you have lost somewhere else. So just because spiritual knowledge is not available doesn't mean that the happiness which you are looking can be found in some place where it just advertises that there is happiness here. So the glitter of this material world is like that light. And the reality of spirituality is like complete dark thing, when actually it's just the opposite. That place is ever lit and this place is always in darkness. So the third thing doesn't exist. In fact, the definition of fear given in Bhagavatam is thinking that something else than Krishna exists. Bhayam dvitiya abhinivesh. There is no dvitiya. There is no parallel force which can compete with Krishna. The moment we think someone like that, we fall in illusion. Like there is a specific religion, sect. They have this philosophy that God is good. God is all-knowing. God is all-pervading. But God is a competitor. And He and God both control your lives. So when something bad happens in your life, God lost that set. Like a tennis match. Just accept He lost it. So when something good happens, God won. So don't blame poor God for anything bad happening in your life, because He has a very powerful competitor. So evil, as powerful as evil might seem in this material world, here it is said, maya tad apashrayam. Evil or maya or illusion is under the shelter of Krishna. And in later verse, even something more is described, vilajya manaya. She's so ashamed of what she is doing, she cannot face Krishna. She cannot come to see Krishna face to face. As much as darkness can come to visit the sun. Darkness is always where the sun is not visible. Anyway, these are some of my thoughts. But to add something, Prabhu? Please. Microphone.
I think your example of the person who's addicted to drink or drugs is appropriate, because it seems like a very tough decision at the time, but when he becomes healthy, then he can enjoy full life. So similarly, when we come to devotional service, at first it seems very strict. Can't do this, can't do that, follow four regulative principles and so on. But actually when one becomes a pure devotee, one can serve Krishna according to his heart's content. So there's full freedom. It's not that we're forced to serve Krishna in one way or another. We can serve Krishna however we want. So at first it seems very difficult, as if it's a very narrow path. But actually once one becomes pure, then there's all kinds of opportunities to serve Krishna.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki. श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ की